The U.S. needs jobs, and there are a lot of ideas out there, but which could actually work?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com.
Good morning. From APM American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Jeremy Hobson. There are a whole lot of people with a whole lot of suggestions for how to grow a whole lot of jobs. On Thursday, President Obama will offer his plan. In a speech yesterday, he offered a small taste, including rebuilding bridges and roads.
There is work to be done, and there are workers ready to do it. Labor is on board, business is on board. We just need Congress to get on board. Let's put America back to work.
Today, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce released a letter detailing its ideas for bumping job numbers. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney will also weigh in this week. But which plans might actually work? Georgetown economist Harry Holzer joins me now. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning.
So when we're talking about job creation, what ideas are out there right now?
There's really two strands. There are things that will put more money in the hands of consumers to stimulate general demand. And there's also ideas to more directly create more jobs, either in the public or the private sector. So, for instance, in the latter category, you'd put things like an infrastructure bank or certain kinds of tax credits to employers that create jobs. Whereas in the first category, things like extending the payroll tax cut that was enacted last year.
And which of these plans and ideas can create enough jobs to actually matter and to help the economy?
That's really hard to figure because that depends on how much the administration and Congress want to invest. The more resources you're willing to put into these areas, the bigger the bang would be. In some areas, like tax credits for employment, if that were actually enacted, for pretty modest sums, you could get some decent new job creation, enough that you'd notice.
And what are the chances of any of these plans actually getting through Congress and getting through the White House right now?
Frankly, the Republicans have an incentive not to do anything because that improves their chances to win the White House in 2012. But given the seriousness of the situation and given that they may look obstructionist if they do nothing, one can imagine that there might be a few items that they can come to agreement on, like certain kinds of tax cuts, the payroll tax cut, maybe the employment tax cut. Then, of course, the other question is, you know, will they demand a very high price tag in return for anything like that?
And what do you think?
I'm a little skeptical right now, to be honest, but I suppose we should keep our minds open and keep our ears open and hear what happens.
Georgetown economist Harry Holzer, thanks so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This week, Marketplace continues coverage of the breakdown, our economy one step at a time, with a special look at jobs and getting America back to work. Now, let's do the numbers. European markets are up this morning. The Swiss government has decided to peg its currency to the euro to help its exporters. Japan's Nikkei is off more than 2%. U.S. markets were closed for the holiday yesterday. The Dow finished Friday down 253 points. But the head of the World Bank says he doesn't think the U.S. economy will slip back into recession. So we've got that.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by IBM, working to help mid-sized businesses become the engines of a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/engines. By MassMutual, offering business owners financial guidance for the long term. Information at massmutual.com. And by the United Methodist Church, offering an opportunity for listeners to join others to reclaim September 11th as a day of hope at rethinkchurch.org.
With the 10th anniversary of 9/11 this Sunday, we'll spend this week taking stock of the economic consequences of the terror attacks. Today, business travel. You might think that 9/11 did major damage to the market, but it turns out the attacks actually forced changes that made travel cheaper for business flyers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Ginzer reports.
Of all the places to be on the morning of September 11th, 2001, Salman Sredny was on a plane. He was flying from Florida to Chicago on business for the online trading firm TradeStation, where he's now CEO. Sredny overheard the guy across the aisle talking on one of those seatback phones. He asked him what was going on.
And he told me that the White House was on fire, the Pentagon was on fire, and the Twin Towers in New York were on fire. And I said, come on, that can't be for real.
10 years later, Sredny still flies a lot, but his employees do not. TradeStation used to bring its workers to its Florida headquarters 4 times a year. Now company-wide meetings are done by video conference, weekly ones too. Sredny gives me a quick demonstration with an assistant.
Did you get that package I sent you on FedEx?
Yes, I did.
TradeStation saves more than $1 million a year on travel by video conferencing. Sredny says the company would be doing business this way even if 9/11 hadn't happened, but he says the attacks sped up the process. 9/11 also brought about another big change for businesses. It made business travel cheaper. The disaster happened just as online travel bookings were taking off. Sites like Expedia created more price competition among airlines, and 9/11 scared people away from flying. Christopher Elliott is a travel blogger. He says 9/11 finally gave business travelers, who were used to paying top dollar, buying power.
Demand dropped off a cliff, and the few business travelers that remained were in a unique position where they could negotiate.
Sredny says there's something 9/11 didn't change, the need for FaceTime. His company was recently acquired by a Japanese firm. He's headed to Asia by air to do a little grip and grin with his new partners. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, London's Sunday Telegraph is reporting that 4 out of 5 British stores sell men's pants with a larger waist than what's on the label. So those 34s are more like 36s. Sorry to break it to you guys. The Telegraph is using the marvelous term manatee sizing instead of vanity sizing, a trend familiar to most women. Manatee sizing. I'm going to be saying that all day long. Excuse me, shopkeep. Are those slacks actually 32s or are they manatee sized? In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
These days, pretty much everyone is talking about this.
I have a lot of friends that have fallen into unemployment.
Actually, I don't think we've seen any decent job growth.
Everybody is pretty much telling the same thing. We're not hiring, try back later.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. A special look at jobs and getting America back to work on our breakdown coverage next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.